ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I want you to think about waking up one morning and every $10 and $20 note no longer has any value. That's what happened in India in 2016. Narendra Modi announced he was getting rid of most 500 and 1,000 rupee banknotes.
500 rupee and 1,000 rupee currency notes presently in use will no longer be legal tender from midnight to night.
The Prime Minister gave two reasons for the change. He wanted to shut down the black economy and make India a cashless society. Modi was hell-bent on making India a truly modern economy. He said he wanted it to be one without corruption that previous governments had been accused of for years.
For years, this country has failed that corruption, black money and terrorism are fast-running source holding us back in the race towards development.
Things got chaotic though. There were protests and cash shortages. People were freaking out trying to exchange old notes they had. So there were lines around the block of ATMs and banks.
How do you live your daily life? How do you get your milk? How do you get your vegetables? How do you eat anything?
There were even reports of people dying from exhaustion, standing for hours in those queues. And poor people, who really relied on cash at that time, struggled.
Anger has intensified in India as the banks struggle to dispense cash following the government's decision to withdraw large denomination notes.
We've heard a few times during this podcast that people say Modi can be a stubborn guy, and he was determined to grow the country's economy. So he powered through with getting rid of the notes.
When I first visited the US as a prime minister, India was the 10th largest economy in the world. Today, India is the 5th largest economy.
8 years later and there are no 1,000 rupee notes in my wallet and I pay for pretty much everything in India with an app. The country's got its own digital currency system.
It's the season for papaya?
Yes, ma'am. Only summertime papaya, mango and Indian mandarin.
Even market owners use digital payments now. Like the fruit and veg guy with the stall down the road from my house has a QR code I scan to pay for our produce.
I'll pay with Paytm?
Yes, ma'am.
Which one's your code? This one?
Yeah.
The top one?
1, 2.
Okay, how much is it?
145.
Okay.
Narendra Modi loves to tell the world that he's growing this country's economy. And in a place that used to be synonymous with poverty, he says he's lifting people out of it. He's brought in digital payments in villages. He ran a big campaign to make sure every poor person has a toilet. Modi's also gotten close to the super rich. And some say his economic success as a politician is entwined with another Indian, a businessman with a similar personal story. His name is Gautam Adani. That might sound familiar. Adani runs a huge company which runs ports and mines in Australia as well. I want to find out, though, have the real lives of normal Indians improved since Narendra Modi became Prime Minister? Because he loves to say he's fixed people's lives. He's made that a big part of his story, and that's what's helped him become perhaps the most popular leader on the globe. Or is Narendra Modi just helping his billionaire friends and increasing the gap between the rich and poor? I'm Avani Dias, and on this episode of Looking for Modi, Modi and the Money. When Narendra Modi became the chief minister of his home state of Gujarat, he had this vision to make it an economic hub. And it made sense because since ancient times, it's been this crucial place for trade between India and places as far off as Egypt, even the UK.
Gujarat is in the northwest of the country, very close to the border with Pakistan. It's part of traditional trade routes to the west of India, to the Gulf. It has a lot of ports, refining facilities, and it was one of India's most business-friendly states.
That's James Crabtree, who used to be an India correspondent for the Financial Times, but now he's a political analyst looking at finance in Asia.
The Gujarat model was about making Gujarat the most attractive place in India for investment, be that foreign investment or from India.
Modi was bringing in policies which are now known as the Gujarat model. Basically, the government would make things easier for businesses to operate in the state.
So if you wanted to set up a factory, the government would help you find the land, they would help you find workers, they would help you get the water and the power that you needed.
The only problem was after the riots in 2002, which we heard about on the last episode, Modi was getting slammed in the international press and by the business world.
Human rights groups accused Modi of doing nothing to stop the riots. India's left cast him as a butcher, and the US refused to renew his visa.
Some investors looked at the violence and were like, Gujarat is a volatile place. Do not want to go there. He even got grilled at a conference by some billionaires about the deaths in the riots. Modi had to promote Gujarat again as a place that could develop. And to do that, he needed some allies on his side. And one of them was a businessman called Gautam Adani, a fellow Gujarati, a uni dropout who'd also grown up in an ordinary family. When Modi was getting grilled by tycoons at that conference after the riots, Adani went out on a limb and defended him.
Well, so Adani is something close to a self-made man. Gautam Adani's rise mirrored that of Narendra Modi. Most of his businesses were in Gujarat. And so he and Modi developed almost in lockstep. And it helped that they got on with each other. They were reasonably friendly. And one of the things that helped Modi present this image of Gujarat being a business-friendly place was the success of Adani as a homegrown tycoon.
Gautam Adani was building what would become a very lucrative business. He didn't create anything new necessarily, but it's got businesses like managing airports, mines, electricity generations, weapons.
What Adani did was he invested in Gujarat and he built businesses that helped the state grow. And what Modi did was he tried to create a business-friendly environment that would allow an entrepreneur like Adani to flourish.
It worked. Modi was rewriting his story as the leader of Gujarat. Instead of the guy who led the state when there were brutal riots, he started to be seen as the chief minister running an efficient and lucrative place. Modi says under his leadership, Gujarat became one of the most important industrialised states.
Narendra Modi marketed his home state as vibrant Gujarat. Its largest city, Ahmedabad, is clean and well organised. The state's infrastructure is better than in most other parts of the country. This business-friendly environment attracts big industries.
Adani contributed to that in the sense that he was one of the most recognisable homegrown tycoons. So having, in addition to having foreign investors, the fact that you had some recognisable Indian tycoons who were building big businesses in the state was also helpful to his ability to project himself as this economic success story.
Some economists have said, yeah, Modi is right. Gujarat did grow financially while he was the leader. But others say it was already one of the richest states in India when he took over.
India's GDP is running at around 8% and the country is predicted to leapfrog Japan to become the world's third largest economy by the middle of the century, behind China and the US.
While Modi was Gujarat Chief Minister, the country was being led by the Congress Party, which had been largely in power since India's independence. The population was booming, with so many young people ready to work. Everyone was looking at India to become the next big superpower. But in the 2010s, the Congress Party was being slammed with allegations of corruption. All those hopes for the country plummeted, and Modi saw this as an opportunity. He ran for Prime Minister in 2014 on this stance of not only being an anti-elite guy, but one who could get rid of corruption and bring economic progress like he'd achieved in Gujarat to the whole of India and get jobs for normal Indians. For the people who were sick of seeing powerful, corrupt leaders, Modi was a refreshing new face for the country. He won that election hands down.
There was jubilation at the headquarters of the opposition BJP as the results started coming in.
And Gautam Adani's business was flourishing too.
One of the things that helped Adani was the fact that whenever he got into trouble, he had reasonably good relations with Modi and his administration, and he could get them to fix problems that he had. And so their rise mirrored one another.
When he took office, Narendra Modi did something that still gets talked about. He flew from Gujarat to the capital, New Delhi, in Adani's private jet.
BJP's prime ministerial candidate Narendra Modi today flew in a private jet from Gujarat's Ahmedabad to Jharkhand's Bokaro. There's nothing unusual in this, but the eye-catching thing was the glaring Adani name on the jet.
It was seen as a sign of these two friends becoming so powerful together. One was the new prime minister, the other one of the richest people in the world. People saw that jet ride and started asking questions about their relationship. I've come to Mumbai. It's on the west coast, just south of Gujarat. And people call this the New York of the country. It's the financial hub. It's so humid and sweaty, and it's a place in India where you can see the gap between the rich and the poor. There are luxury shops, and the biggest Bollywood stars live here. And you turn a corner, and there are giant slums. Right in the centre of the city is Dharavi, one of the largest slums on the planet.
Hi.
The buildings are so tightly squeezed together in Dharavi, you have to go through these narrow passages, just wide enough for one person to walk through. It's like a maze. It got famous for being the setting of the movie Slumdog Millionaire. And I'm here because Gautam Adani's company is redeveloping this slum into luxury apartments and malls. And he got approval to do it by the state government, led by Narendra Modi's party.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Hi. You are?
Good.
Okay,
come. Take my shoes off here?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. The Dharavi redevelopment is one of a bunch of projects that's a big part of Modi's story, that he's developing India into this modern country, taking it out of poverty.
So this is the kitchen?
Kitchen.
So how many floors? Two floors upstairs?
Yes.
And your two sons?
Huh.
Meenakshi Savania lives here, and like most of the residents, she works here as well. Families have lived and worked here for generations, since the 1800s. Som, our producer, is helping translate. Som, we met Meenakshi in her home in the slum where she also makes pottery, right? It's one of the major industries in Dharavi. Generations of people have been doing that craft here. But what did she say about the redevelopment?
Yes, she told us that in Dharavi, most residents live here and work here as well. And she heard about redevelopment, and it means they will lose their work, and that many people depend on their work, this work, for food and livelihood.
I had a lot of assumptions about slums before visiting them here, because when you see them in the movies, there are a lot of negative stereotypes. But when I'm here, it's clear these places are a home and a livelihood for people. On one end of Dharavi, there's leather tanning, there's a textiles production section, food produce, the pottery like in Meenakshi's area. Dharavi's informal economy turns over around $1 billion a year. Meenakshi does say the living conditions are tough, and you can clearly see that, but she's worried age-old practices like pottery in the slum will be destroyed in Adani's redevelopment. Adani has promised to give the residents new houses. What did Meenakshi tell us about that?
She said they are living in shanties and that they want new homes. But they need their livelihoods protected too, to make sure they can still do their jobs.
In our top story, the Adani Group yesterday won the bid to redevelop Dharavi, one of the largest slum clusters in Mumbai.
The governments and companies have wanted to redevelop Dharavi for a century. In July last year, the state government, led by Modi's party, the BJP, formally gave the Adani Group the tender to redevelop Dharavi. It sits in the CBD, surrounded by giant skyscrapers, and it's a really coveted position that could make $3.7 billion Australian dollars in a redevelopment. Adani said on his blog that he's redeveloping it with good intent and that the people of Dharavi will drive it. But everyone we spoke to hadn't heard anything from the company.
Meenakshi said that no one had come to her so far from the company. And only information they had about redevelopment from news and media. She said no one asked them what needs to be done, but they are happy to speak about it when they are approached.
Last year, Dharavi's residents and opposition parties protested Adani's redevelopment. Anand Shivram is from the Save Dharavi movement and was there. And he's saying they're not against new developments, they just don't trust Adani to do it. So Anand told us that the government favoured Adani, but what exactly was he worried about there?
He said he's against the person chosen for redevelopment, Adani. He said that residents want to stay in Dharavi, not to move away, and that government favoured Adani by giving company this project.
And that point made by Anand is one that's come up over and over again. James Crabtree says many ask whether Adani gets special benefits from Modi and his party.
They're both quite private individuals, and so they never said in public, you know, what exactly was going on behind closed doors. What Adani did was he invested in Gujarat and he built businesses that helped the state grow. And what Modi did was he tried to create a business-friendly environment that would allow an entrepreneur like Adani to flourish. There are people in India who say that the relationship went beyond that and that, in a sense, special favors were given, but that's never been conclusively proven.
Can you tell me a bit about how Modi would help Adani in terms of fixing those problems? Because it's obviously been a big point of focus over the years.
So lying behind your question is a sort of lurking issue of impropriety, as in, did Adani get some help from Modi, which is above and beyond what one would have expected? And the answer to that is nobody really is sure. And so I suppose one of the sort of slight mysteries of Mr. Adani's rise is whether there was anything untoward going on, as in, did he get special favors that he shouldn't have got? And nobody has ever really proved this. Opposition politicians in India from the Congress party will allege that Modi gave Adani special help, but it's never really been definitively proven.
I want to mention here that we've made repeated requests for an interview with Gautam Adani, but his media team has said it won't happen. On his blog, though, Adani says he's not just doing this for money, but that residents will benefit from his redevelopment. He says residents will get gas, water, electricity, sanitation and drainage. But the people who live in Dharavi told me their biggest concern is that Gautam Adani has been accused of fraud.
Adani is under siege. An American activist investment firm, aptly named Hindenburg, has published a 100-page report accusing Adani of decades of brazen accounting fraud, stock manipulation, and money laundering.
Hindenburg Research is known as a short seller. Now, I don't want to get too technical, but short selling is essentially hoping to profit from a company's stock falling. A company like Hindenburg Research makes its profits by identifying man-made disasters in the market. And Hindenburg Research said it found major issues at Adani. Hindenburg accused Adani of stock manipulation, accounting fraud, and having excessive debt. Gautam Adani has consistently denied that, calling the allegations baseless and unsubstantiated speculations. But the damage was done. At the time, it led to company losses of more than $150 billion. Opposition parties came together and called for a government inquiry into the allegations. While the Modi government didn't specifically order a probe, India's highest court set up an expert committee and ordered the country's market regulator to look into the accusations. Adani had a win in the court case. The Supreme Court said his company doesn't need to be investigated by other government agencies. Adani said that meant the truth had prevailed. James Crabtree, who's written a book about billionaires in India, says even though Adani and Modi's relationship has been so scrutinised, these allegations didn't really affect the Prime Minister.
I mean, it's not as if because of the Adani news coverage, suddenly foreign investors have got cold feet about India and decided that governance standards are not very high and they should, you know, go and invest somewhere else. I mean, quite the contrary has happened, as in the Adani allegations emerged at a time in which foreign investors have only grown ever more keen on investing money in India.
After looking into this, it turns out it's impossible for me to get an answer to my question about whether there's been wrongdoing with Adani and Modi. No one's been able to officially prove anything. But James Crabtree says Adani and other tycoons have figured out how to work the political system in their favour.
What you can say is that Adani grew very, very, very quickly indeed. And if special favours from the government were not the explanation for that, then you have to find some other explanation as to why it was he managed to build his empire so quickly.
In the 10 years Modi's been Prime Minister, Gautam Adani's wealth has gone from $6 billion to $150 billion before it crashed, thanks to the Hindenburg report. He has made a lot of that wealth back now, though, with a net worth of $103 billion at the moment.
What was clear was that Modi created the kind of business environment that allowed Adani to grow. So he would provide land for special economic zones or help him develop the port. He would win government contracts, albeit through open bids. Those are the kind of things that we're talking about here.
A good example, according to researchers, of Adani making money like this is his company's coal mine in Australia.
During his visit, Mr. Modi has been talking up India's Adani Mining's interest in the untapped Galilee Basin in central West Queensland.
Modi and Adani went to Australia together just after the 2014 election. Modi announced a $1 billion loan from a government-run bank to Adani's company to develop the Carmichael coal mine in Queensland. The Australian government initially offered a loan as well, but in the end, that one was never granted.
Stop! Adani! Stop! Stop! Adani!
The Carmichael coal mine's been protested over for years because of environmental concerns, but it's now up and running. That coal from Australia gets burned in a plant in India. And the year after their Australia trip, Modi went to Bangladesh to meet with his counterpart Sheikh Hasina, and Adani's electricity arm signed a deal for the power from that plant in India to be sold in Bangladesh.
Some of it came because of crony capitalism, in which a certain type of Indian tycoon worked out how to work the political system and made an enormous amount of money off the back of that. And as a consequence of this, I mean, I think anyone listening to this podcast will have in their head the idea that India is quite an unequal country. But one of the things that is worth noting is India has become a lot more unequal, even over the last 10 or 15 years.
And this system has led to more billionaires since Modi came into power. In the mid-90s, there were only 2 billionaires in India. Now there are more than 100.
Yeah, the increase in the wealth of the super rich, meaning the ultra super rich at the very, very top of India, has been enormous. And I suppose that happened for two reasons, one of which was there was a lot of wealth creation and a lot of that filtered upwards. People at the bottom have been doing better, but people at the very top have been doing spectacularly better.
We know the rich have become richer under Modi's leadership, but what about life for normal Indians? As Prime Minister, Narendra Modi has spoken a lot about giving poor people better living conditions, like this program he introduced in his first year as PM called the Clean India Mission, to give every Indian a toilet. Modi said the construction of toilets has ended a massive societal imbalance. At the time, India had the highest number of people in the world who would defecate in the open, mostly in rural places, just because they had no other option. In 2019, Modi said he'd succeeded with his toilet program.
आज वो बढ़कर करीब करीब 100% पहुंच रहा है.
The world is amazed that toilets have been provided to more than 600 million people in 60 months, building more than 110 million toilets. Modi says 37 million houses have also been built under his leadership by this year, and 20 million more will be built if he wins this election. I've come to one of those housing schemes funded in Delhi by Modi's government to see for myself what life is like for a regular Indian person and if they've really benefited because of him. There are about a dozen apartment blocks here and they are 15 stories tall, painted beige with small balconies. Kids are playing outside as the sun goes down.
What is the top floor? 15?
No, 14.
14. So this is the 8th.
We head up to the 8th floor in one building and meet two of the residents.
What's your name?
My name is Manisha.
Manisha, nice to meet you. Are you sisters?
Yes.
And Tanuja. Manisha, who is 18, and her sister, Tanuja, who's 28. They, along with the other 3,000 residents in these flats, used to live in a slum nearby.
We used to face some problems, so they moved us here.
What were the sort of problems? What were the difficulties there?
Difficulties like we have water issues, like there's some problems about like public toilets. We don't have enough space to live there. Many problems like this.
And what was it like as a young woman living there? Was it difficult or what was it like?
It is, of course, a tough situation, but we managed anyhow.
In 2022, Modi inaugurated these flats. The residents are also given food rations from the government and discounted medical insurance.
In terms of house, that's really better than the older one, and it's easy for us to live here. Like, it's a flat kind of thing. So here, everything is so manageable to do. Or like earlier, we used to live in a slum kind of place. So there is not appropriate for all of us. There are many difficulties over there, so it's good and better.
And as women, they say they feel safer here than in shanties in the slum.
This is a place where watchmen are also there to
in
guard.
In the night also, and they are always here.
The night, they all sit there and do their duties.
It's obvious the lives of these women have improved under Modi. They say they're proud of what he's done for India.
Of course, there have been big developments in the countries. So we should be proud to be an Indian.
But when I'm at their place, it's obvious things could definitely get better. There are six members of Manisha and Tanuja's family living in a tiny one-bedroom flat. It's tight, and that's the case for everyone here. When announcing these policies, Modi's like, I get it, I grew up in humble circumstances too, and I will improve your life. And it's schemes like this, giving people a house or a toilet, that's made Modi so popular today. It's been a huge task to improve the lives of 1.4 billion people, and it's clear he's made progress.
You know, if you live in a country like Australia or the United Kingdom or France, is the life of your children going to be better than yours? Certainly there are some people in the rich industrialized economies who feel like the coming generation have it tougher than the one that went before. I mean, that's not true in a country like India. Everyone is getting more prosperous, albeit from a very low base. And so, yes, I think if you have lived in India over the last 10 years, you will have seen, you know, material differences in your living standards.
Researcher James Crabtree says Modi has transformed India, but he could only do that with the help of the rich, because it's expensive in a capitalist democracy to give people basic things like houses or toilets.
His policies have mostly aimed at supporting those at the bottom end of the income spectrum. So the BJP spends quite a lot of time winning support by handing out free cooking stoves or building toilets or developing running water, you know, so doing things that will benefit the lives of ordinary Indians. On the other hand, they try to be supportive of business interest, and at some level, in an unspoken, behind closed doors way, they need to have good relations with the super rich because they're the people who fund the political system. So it's an open secret in India that India is a very expensive multi-party democracy, comparable really only to the United States.
While India's economy has gone up and down under Modi, it's now the fastest growing in the world.
It wasn't that long ago, you know, within the last 10 or 20 years, where in parts of India you had real abject African-style poverty. And it's quite hard to find that anymore.
Getting out of abject poverty is the bare minimum. Modi's focused on developing India, but one thing that's still a problem is employment. Manisha says a lot of people in the housing complex still don't have jobs.
Okay, if I'll be honest, then it would be in job sector, because as we can see as a youngster, we can see that there is a lot of job problems in us.
An estimated 8 million young people come into the job market each year, like Manisha. But less than half of Indian adults are employed. Economists say Modi's government needs to deal with that if he wants to truly make India an economic superpower like the US or China.
I would request Modi ji and our government, if he can provide more job facilities and opportunities, then it will be a great honor for us.
I also need that the job sectors will be more and more powerful day by day, because youngsters are the future of the country.
James says the gap between the rich and poor has only increased since Modi's been prime minister.
And a lot of people are not worried about that. There are reasons to worry about the gap between the top and the bottom. Very, very, very unequal countries, for instance, a country like South Africa or some of the Latin American economies, their inequalities make them more financially unstable. It's harder to deliver economic reforms. There's a whole host of reasons why having a super unequal country is not something that you really should aspire to, not least the fact that once your economy does reach those levels of extreme inequality that you see in countries like Brazil and Argentina, it's very hard to row that back. What happens is if you start out as a wildly unequal country, then you end up as a slightly richer but still wildly unequal country, and those countries tend not to have the best outcomes.
Narendra Modi is so popular in the lead up to the next election, the polls show he will win hands down. But has he destroyed the world's largest democracy in the process? On the next episode of Looking for Modi, how I got caught up in Modi's story. This podcast is by me, Avani Dias, and produced by Madeline Jenner. Research by Som Patidar and Aditya Varia. Audio production is by Anna John.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.